So thanks for letting me speak today. My name's Chris Whittle. I'm a first year PhD student under the supervision of Leo Barak in Southampton. And I'm gonna be talking to you today about our work towards a frequency domain calculation of the cell force and hyperbolic scattering. So obviously you've heard a lot today from Ollie and others about why we're interested in calculating scattering observables with cell force calculations. So I'm going to jump straight into the frequency domain. Now, frequency domain methods are fairly ubiquitous for bound orbits, and we're now able to calculate the first order gravitational cell force along arbitrary bound Kerr geodesics. And we really value these frequency domain methods because they can provide accurate calculations at relatively high speed. And we're hoping that that's going to carry over to the unbound case to at least some extent. But there are certainly some issues you have when moving to unbound orbits. So firstly, our orbit is no longer going to be periodic, which means we're going to end up with a continuous rather than a discrete spectrum. And also we're going to continue to suffer with the well-known ultraviolet problem near the particle's location. But the method of extended homogeneous solutions that we would use to overcome this can't be applied quite as easily anymore. There are also some novel problems you face, such as the need to evaluate certain slowly converging integrals out to radial infinity. And at the end, we're just going to briefly introduce what we believe to be a novel infrared problem with the external solution. So to investigate and hopefully fix and deal with some of these issues, we're going to use a scalar field toy model in a Schwarzschild background. So our scalar field equation of motion is just the standard wave equation, sourced by the scalar charge density corresponding to a particle moving along a fixed hyperbolic Schwarzschild geodesic. We're going to fully separate our field into spherical and Fourier harmonics to result in this standard scalar field equation in the frequency domain. And to understand what problems we might face with the unbound problem, it's helpful to take a step back to the bound case. So in that case, you would write down the inhomogeneous field, this inhomogeneous field, using the method of variation of parameters. And we define this basis psi plus or minus of homogeneous solutions, which are defined by physical boundary conditions at infinity and at the horizon respectively. And these are chosen so that our inhomogeneous solution here is the physical field we want. But if you were to attempt to reconstruct the time domain field directly from the inhomogeneous solution, you would run into this well-known Gibbs phenomenon. So to illustrate this, I've included this figure from Barak, Ori, and Sago's 2008 EHS paper. And in the left-hand panel, you can see the convergence of the Fourier series towards the scalar monopoles sourced by an eccentric Schwarzschild geodesic. And near the particle's location, which is represented by this kink in the curve, the convergence is slower than its surrounding points. And if you instead look at the convergence of the Fourier series to the radial derivative, on either side of the discontinuity at the particle's location, you see these standard Gibbs waves, and the Fourier series converge to the two-sided average at the particle's location. Now, to try and get around some of these issues, the EHS method expresses the time domain field on either side of the world line in terms of analytic homogeneous solutions, psi tilde plus or minus, and these will have Fourier series which are exponentially convergent and which converge uniformly in R. And Barak, Ori, and Sago's original argument as to how you can do this proceeds as follows. So first, we're going to introduce a new basis of homogeneous solutions defined on the entire spacetime. And to do this, we just start with our unit normalized homogeneous solutions, and we multiply them by this normalization integral, which is chosen so that the corresponding, they agree with the inhomogeneous solution in the source-free regions R greater than R max and R less than R min. And with this choice, for example, we'll have psi equals psi tilde plus in the source-free region R greater than R max. And we'll also note that both psi and psi tilde plus are actually analytic everywhere outside of the particle's orbit. So we then make this analyticity argument that they must actually agree everywhere where they're analytic. So they must actually agree everywhere outside of the location. And you can do a similar argument inside the orbit. So in the unbound case, the inhomogeneous frequency domain field can again be written down using variation parameters in much the same form. And I'll just briefly note that the second integral here has an upper limit of infinity, And this integral is well defined and it does converge, but it does so slowly, like oscillations over R. And this is going to be relevant for some of the things we talk about later. So I just plotted briefly here the inhomogeneous field for the unbound case for the 2-2 mode evaluated at a radius of 6m. And this is for a geodesic with energy 1.1 and periapsis 4m illustrated here. This is going to be the geodesic I use for all later plots as well. So the spectrum does roughly what we'd expect it to. It's peaked at small positive frequencies, and then it decays, not the most rapid decay, but it does decay with frequency. So to understand why EHS isn't going to work in quite the same way with the unbound orbit, I think it's helpful to consider these plots at the bottom, which give you a sort of idea of what a bound and an unbound orbit will look like in the TR plane. So for the bound orbit, you can see there are two source-free regions. To the left, R less than R min, and to the right, R greater than R max. But for the unbound orbit, we keep the left-hand R less than R min, but we do lose the right-hand R greater than R max region. And this means that the usual EHS argument can be made to work inside of the orbit, but it can't work outside without some modification. So that's something we've been investigating, whether we can find an alternative proof for the external EHS and hopefully use it with the same form as for the bound case. But we're also open to the idea that we may actually need to modify the form of the external extended homogeneous solution. And this is very much something we're still looking at. I think it's also a good time to briefly mention another proposed direction, which is this observation that if you define the inverse radial coordinate U equals 1 over R, then you can actually extend your scattering orbit into the U less than 0 region smoothly, and you get an orbit which is periodic in MENO time. So it has been proposed that if you could find a suitable global time coordinate which allows your field equation to be separated into frequency modes and which preserves the periodicity of your orbit, then you could actually apply extended homogeneous solutions in much the same way as usual, with two source-free regions on either side and with a discrete spectrum. However, we aren't aware of a suitable global time coordinate, and we're not actively investigating this possibility at the moment. There is also one final observation, which is that for the modes and regularization, you can just use the lower one-sided values using the lower EHS, if that's the route you want to go down. So to illustrate that, I've just included this plot of the time domain function for the 2-2 mode reconstructed from the inhomogeneous frequency domain solution and from the internal EHS. And to the right of this black vertical line, our field point is inside the orbit, and we expect these two curves to agree closely, which they do, beginning to diverge near the particle's world line and disagreeing completely to the left-hand side. So that's all as we'd expect and very reassuring. So as I mentioned earlier, we do have some issues with some integrals with slow convergence. So whatever route you take, you're going to need to compute radial integrals which extend out to infinity. And in practice, you're going to want to truncate them at a finite radius, but that's going to have to be quite a large radius because of the slow convergence. Now, one possible way around this is to note that in the wave zone, the integrand can actually be expanded in a power series in 1 over R in such a way that the resulting integrals are known analytically in terms of the gamma function. And this could be implemented, for example, by puncturing your integrands by subtracting off an analytic part and adding on the analytic integrals. Or it could be done by doing the integral fully numerically up to some truncation radius and then adding a series of increasingly accurate analytic corrections to your truncated integral to try and achieve a higher desired accuracy. So from this point onwards, we're going to assume that outside of the particle's orbit, there is an extended homogeneous solution we can use, and that it takes the same form as the usual form. So it's this normalization integral in equation 9 multiplied by the unit normalized psi plus. And I'll just note that this C plus here is quite acutely from the sort of problems I've been discussing on this slide. So basically psi minus grows polynomially for a long time, and it means you do have to integrate out to a very large radii, especially for low frequency modes. And there is a danger that this may be masking something much more sinister, which is that our candidate external EHS is potentially pathological due to an IR divergence. So on the right hand here, you can see the Candid EHS, the 2-2 mode plotted at a certain radius, and obviously it's very poorly behaved at small frequencies. Now, for a while, we assumed this was just a numerical artifact, the result of not integrating out sufficiently far, and we believed that if we did fix that, then we would get a reasonable curve. But actually, more recently, we did a heuristic analysis to look at how the different frequency-dependent terms scale with frequency. And we believe that there is actually a genuine power law divergence as omega goes to zero in this candidate EHS. I think it's, to try and understand that, it's, I think, helpful to look at this little sketch on the left-hand side. So I don't take this too seriously, but it's just a sketch of the behavior of psi minus against R. So in the near horizon wave zone, it's just waves with unit amplitude. But then it undergoes this polynomial growth period, which ends in the external wave zone when R is approximately 1 over omega, by which time psi minus has reached a sort of amplitude like 1 over omega to the n plus 1. And in the unbound case, we're integrating out to radial infinity, which means we're actually integrating out into the wave zone for arbitrarily small frequencies. And this is fundamentally different to the bound case where you truncate at a finite radius. And this enables you to get different small frequency behavior. And it's this which enables you to get the power law divergence. So we have been considering ways in which we may be able to get around this. And one proposal has been to consider a window function. So this is just an example of a window function which has the properties we want. It's smooth, it decays exponentially at infinity, and we can make it go, we can make it approach unity as omega goes to zero at whatever rate we like. So once you've chosen such a window function, the aim is to use it to split the solution into high and low frequency parts. So in deriving equation 12, which is valid outside of the particle's orbit, we've assumed that the EHS method can be applied outside and that the usual form is valid. So the psi EHS plus here is exactly what was written in equation 10 on the previous slide. And in this way...
About 3 minutes left, Chris.
Thank you. In this way, both terms are well-behaved as omega goes to zero and both decay exponentially at infinity. So we tried to implement this numerically and reconstruct the time domain functions to test them. So again, we've got the time domain functions from the external window DHS and directly from the inhomogeneous. And they should agree on the left-hand side of the black line where our field point is outside the orbit. But it's not a particularly good agreement if there's an agreement, any agreement at all. So this could be that we've made a mistake in our derivation of the external window DHS or that there's some subtlety that we've missed there. It could be that we've just made a numerical implementation mistake, or it could be that our assumptions about the existence and form of the external EHS are invalid. We don't have enough data to know yet, and this is something we're investigating. And indeed, this idea of how, if at all, we can apply EHS in the external region is really the main thing we've been interested in recent months. But we also have some other things to work on, such as some numerical issues, even with the internal solution. We also need to do the time domain reconstruction. So it's not as simple as just summing a Fourier sum anymore. We have to do a Fourier inversion integral. And so far we've done a very simple fix with Simpson rule, which isn't going to be fast or accurate enough for production code. But once we've got that figured out, we're going to push on with the self-force calculation and the resulting effects on scattering observables like the scatter angle and time delay. And obviously we're going to want to try and compare with time domain calculations, such as those discussed by Oliver Long for me. So thank you for listening to my talk. If there's still time, I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Thank you. We do have time for a quick question, and we have Leo raising his hand. Leo, I believe I've unmuted you.
Hi, Chris, nice talk. I was wondering, one thing that people have done, or at least I've heard people do plenty of times in these time domain codes, is have like, moving location of the, or having the grid track the location of the particle or the jump basically in the homogeneous solutions. And it's not like the particle goes off to, the particle is on a time-like world line. So shouldn't there be a coordinate system in which the particle is just like, not running off and you still can have an extended homogeneous solution outside?
So I feel like The main issue with that is whether or not after you've changed your new coordinates, is your field equation actually going to be separable into frequency modes? Because, for example, you might just try rescaling the radial coordinate by rp of t, but then it's not separable.
Okay. All right. I see. Great. Thanks.